Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet Show. This is your host, Adam Graham, coming to you as always from Boise, Idaho. And I want to first of all thank everybody. This has actually been our best week for downloads ever. I don't know whether it's the popularity of the Jeff Regan episodes. We actually got a couple nice comments on those. Or it's the fact that there's been some corrections and, you know, just the general growth in podcasting in general. But thank you so much for your support. If you've got any comments on today's show, please feel free to email me, adam@adamsweb.us, or you can visit our blog, www.orble.com/dragnet-radio-show. All right, and I do want to, as always, encourage you to go and cast your vote for us on Podcast Alley. This helps promote the show, and so that more people are able to listen to it. And you can go there, you can vote once a month, and I do encourage everybody to do that, because that's gonna help the show grow. Now, I do have a couple comments. I'm going to go ahead and share those. Data TE writes on Podcast Alley, "Adam, enjoy the podcast each week and your interest in all things Dragnet/Web. I especially enjoyed the Jeff Regan show over the past 2 weeks." Well, thanks very much, and it's something we'll look at maybe doing again down the line. Not every week, of course, because it can get to be a little long, but it's definitely a very interesting side of the program. And of course, with Jeff Regan, you've kind of, or also some of Dragnet, of Jack Webb's other detective shows, you've got to kind of ration it out a little bit. If we tried to do one every week, and I'll do a, you know, Jeff Regan or Pat Novak for Hire, we would pretty much run out of episodes very quickly, because there are were fewer episodes of that show. I think we've got more than 300 total episodes of Dragnet, which is, you know, phenomenal. But of Jeff Regan or Pat Novak, we've got a very small total, and even less that are actually available and listenable. And of course, you know, you want to be sure when you actually download those that you make sure that they're ones that Jack White was in, because actually on both shows they had a different a person come on and play Jeff Regan and Jeff Regan for Hire when Jack Webb went to Dragnet. The Jeff Regan show actually continued into about 1950, well after Dragnet had been on the air, with somebody else. And then Pat Novak also had somebody else play Pat Novak. So, we'll definitely keep an eye out for other opportunities like that. He writes, "Love this show. Look forward to it every week." And that's submitted by Pounce UMA. Thank you very much for your support, and it's really appreciated. Before we get into today's program, I'm going to kind of give just some bonus detail. This is kind of off topic, but not entirely, because I know a lot of people who listen to the show are just huge fans of nostalgia, of anything old. For various reasons, I wanted to let everybody know, those who are interested in comic books, that Marvel Comics, if you've not heard, is actually making most of their, or a great deal of their Silver Age works available, along with a whole slew of collections of other comic books, including Spider-Man episodes, issues 1 through 100. Now, they've got some samples there, and they've got older books and newer books. And if you do decide to sign up, you can do so for a low annual rate, which is about $60 or $9.99 a month. Of course, I should mention, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm not actually getting paid anything. That's just an extra added value tip. So definitely check that out. I think that this is really an interesting opportunity, and kind of a nice experiment, because it does give you that opportunity. So let's go ahead. We're going to get into this. This is this case, the big job, is kind of interesting. It's one of the Bunko episodes of Dragnet. Now, the Bunko, of course, is something you rarely see on television because it's just simply not something that is covered. You know, the basic fraud, you know, investigations. Consumer fraud is the type of thing that Bunko actually is. What really makes this particular episode unique is that there's a huge element of danger that comes in here. So we'll go ahead and listen to this. I also want to let you know, before we do that, please, if you've got any comments, email me, adam@adamsweb.us, or check out the blog, www.orble.com/dragnet-radio-show. And we also have still got an, you know, basic online community set up where you can comment and share your thoughts on the show at dragnetradio.ning.com, N-I-N-G.com. All right, so now without any further ado, let's go ahead and we will get into the big job.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to Bunko Fugitive Detail. You receive information an escaped criminal is hiding out in your city. He's dangerous. He may be armed. Your job, get him.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Thursday, April 27th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working a night watch out of Bunko Fugitive Detail. My partner's Ben Romero. Boss is Blaine Steed, captain of Bunko Fugitive. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from communications. It was 6:45 p.m. when I got to room 38, the squad room.
Hi.
Hi.
How about some dinner?
Well, we got one to check out for. Here's the teletype. Skipper just brought it in.
Thanks. From San Rafael, huh? Pick up and hold for this department one Alfred Garvey. Wanted for suspicion, forgery, robbery. This man poses as a fingerprint expert from San Rafael Police Department.
Here's his mug pulled from the record bureau.
Mm-hmm. We're informed Garvey is registered at the Fair Deal Hotel, your city. Where's that?
Over near First and Broadway.
Yeah. Please advise us on his arrest, and officers will arrive with warrant signed Chief Police Frank Kelly, San Rafael, California.
Shouldn't take long to pick him up.
All right, we can eat later, I guess.
Hi.
Hi, Max. What are you doing around? I thought you took off on vacation.
I am. Just came back to pick up some stuff in my locker.
Soft touch?
Sure. Listen, the wife's got the car there. Are you guys going anywhere near North Main and Daly?
Yeah, but we're going to leave right now.
Oh, okay, let me grab my coat.
All right.
You live out near Highland Park, don't you, Matt?
Yeah. Why, well, took the kids shopping in the car this afternoon. Had to get them shoes for our vacation. Sure scuff up the toes in a hurry.
All right, you all set?
Let's go.
Where are you going on your vacation?
Big Bear. Gonna stay the whole 3 weeks. The in-laws own a cabin up there. They even pay the utilities for it.
Pretty nice.
Only one trouble.
What's that?
They're coming with us.
Oh.
Where'd you park?
In the captain's stall.
I'll ride in the back.
Okay.
You two still working on that Valley case?
No, we washed it up Monday.
What's this one?
Teletype from San Rafael. What some guy picked up. Here's a mugshot.
Who's Richards going to work with while he's gone, Mac?
I don't know.
What's the crowd up ahead?
Oh, yeah. Finest convention. I forgot they were having the parade tonight.
You better stay over to one side. I think we can get through all right. Watch those kids there.
Yeah, there we go.
That's the place up ahead, isn't it?
Fair deal, yeah.
We got to stop by this hotel a minute, Max. You want to wait here?
I'll come in.
It's a big turnout for the parade, huh?
Yeah, it's a big crowd.
Fair deal hotel. Look at those rates. 35 cents a day, $2 a week.
Yes, sir. Can I help you?
Police officers, would you look at this picture, please?
All right.
Maybe registered as Alfred Garvey.
Garvey? Sure, came in yesterday. The picture makes him look old.
Is he in now?
Well, let's see. Garvey, room 307. The key's gone. He must be in.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. The elevator's down there at the end of the hall.
Okay.
The elevator's in use.
Let's take the stairs.
I'll wait for you here. I want to see the parade.
Okay, man. Never seen it to fail.
What's that?
Stairs. Every time my arch is hurt, we get a thief to check who lives upstairs.
Just one more flight.
Yeah.
Fast checkout.
It came from downstairs.
The lobby. Come on.
Yep.
Come on, hurry up.
Yep.
Hey, stop him! Stop that guy, police! The police!
It's Maxwell. Max. Max, are you all right?
He went out the door, blue suit.
It was Garvey. Shut your friend.
Call an ambulance.
He ran out the door. Shut your friend.
Come on, Ben. Call that ambulance, will you? Hey, you. Did you see a man come out of this hotel? Did you just see a man come out of this hotel?
I don't know.
All right, Ben, you go that way. I'll check up this way.
Yeah, right. What's the matter? Watch where you're going, huh?
Did you see a man running up this way just now about my height, blue suit?
Huh? No, I didn't see anybody. Did you see anybody?
Hey! Hey, boy!
Yeah, you want a paper, mister?
No, listen. Did you see a man running by here a minute ago in a blue suit?
Well, maybe. I didn't notice. Did you want a paper?
No. I'm sorry. Sorry, lady. Ben! Ben, over here!
Yeah.
Did you spot him?
No, we're gonna need help.
All right, come on.
Friend, he's bleeding. I don't know what to do.
Ben, get a hold of communications. Get some help out here.
Right.
The guy came down to the elevator. It was Garvey, your friend, trying to stop you. Garvey shot him right in the face.
All right, stop yelling,
huh? He was terrible. Now, look, he's bleeding. You better do something.
Will you shut up? Max. Max, how is it?
Chester.
Yeah, all right. Easy, huh?
Garvey came out of the elevator fast with a gun.
All right, take it easy now.
Yo, I got communications here. Block him off the area.
That's fine. Watch that front door. Will you keep those people out of here?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
I'll be here in a minute, boy.
Call the wife, Eleanor.
Ambulance this year.
Yeah.
He looks bad.
He's not going to get any worse.
Hmm?
He's dead. The name on the personnel report said John Warren Maxwell, Sergeant, Los Angeles Police Department, badge number 10377. Nearest living relative, wife, Eleanor Jean Maxwell. Dependents, John Maxwell, Jr., 6 years. Deborah Lee Maxwell, 2 years. Death in line of duty, April 27, 7:15 p.m. John Maxwell's body was removed from Georgia Street to the county morgue. At 7:45, a special detail of men from Homicide and Bunko Fugitive were on the scene to aid in the investigation of the killing. The neighborhood where the Fairdeal Hotel was located was covered for a half mile around. By 9 o'clock, the parade was over and the area was cleared. We had a single lead to work with. In checking out the different taxicab stands in the neighborhood, we found out that 3 separate fares had been picked up within 2 blocks of the hotel 4 minutes after the shooting. Ben and I went to the offices of the taxicab company. The cabs in question were called in and the waybills were checked. The times of the 3 different trips were listed, and so was the address of each destination. We copied down the addresses and then interviewed the drivers.
Hello,
We're going to give each one of you half a dozen pictures. Like to see if you can identify any of them as passengers you picked up tonight near the Fair Deal Hotel.
All right, here you go.
Here you are.
4, 5, 6. Check them carefully, please.
Here are yours, right here. Take a good look at each one of them.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Now, fellas, take your time. Look them all over real good before you make up your mind.
Yeah, here's the one, Sergeant. No mistake.
Let me see. Where'd you pick up this man?
About a block from the hotel. I drove him to a place on 14th Street. Same address on the way, Bill.
Ben?
Yeah?
Alfred Garvey. Ben and I, along with Ricketts and Chandler from Homicide, drove out to the 14th Street address. Another small, transient hotel. The clerk on duty identified Garvey from his mugshot. He said the suspect had called at the hotel at about 7:45 that night and asked to see one of the guests, Mrs. Lorraine Thomas. The clerk said he told Garvey Mrs. Thomas was out, but she hadn't been there for 4 days. Ricketts and Chandler went on stakeout in the lobby of the hotel, and Ben and I went up to the second floor to stake out Mrs. Thomas's room. Friday, 11:25 a.m. Lorraine Thomas returned to the hotel and was taken into custody. We took her to Homicide and questioned her for more than an hour. She admitted that she was acquainted with Garvey, but that's all. 1 o'clock. We went to Clifton's cafeteria for lunch.
Here, you take this tray.
Silverware? You were the first one he ran to after the shooting.
Well, Garvey doesn't have many friends in Los Angeles. Maybe that's why he looked me up. I'll have a mixed green salad, sir.
What kind of work does Garvey do, do you know?
He told me he was in the Merchant Marines.
Coleslaw.
Some of that potato salad, please. Do you know what he does in the Merchant Marine?
He told me he's a steward. French dressing.
Do you know any of his friends in town?
No, I don't. Roger, can I have an extra butter, please?
French roll. What kind do you want, Ben?
Now, give me some of those biscuits. Yeah, thanks. Does
Garvey usually stay at the Fair Deal Hotel when he's in town?
I don't know.
That split pea soup sure looks good, and
we told you it's the police up north were looking for him.
Yeah, I know you did. Like I told you, I've been out with him a few times. That's all I know about him.
He must have introduced you to some of his friends.
I'll have the prime ribs there. Rare. That piece.
How about it? Did you ever meet any of his friends?
Yeah, one or two. No, no gravy.
Meatloaf. Brown gravy. You remember any of the names of his friends?
I just met him, that's all. I don't remember.
Let me have a roast turkey. Go kind of heavy on that dressing, will you? Did you ever go out with any of them?
No.
Why do you think Garvey went to your hotel after the shooting?
I don't know.
Maybe he figured you'd hide him.
I don't know why he should.
He killed a man and headed straight for your place. Doesn't make you look too good.
I can't help that. I like some of those string beans, please.
Miss Thomas, you know it's going to go hard on you if you're holding back information on Garvey.
I'm not.
Why don't you take some of that summer squash, Joe? Good for you.
Well, I can't eat that much. When did you first meet Garvey?
About 3 years ago, up in St. Helena.
You might as well keep your nose clean.
How do you mean?
We're going to reach you, Miss Thomas. You might as well tell us all you know.
Look, if Garvey's killing people, I don't want to have any more to do with him.
We do. Now, where is he?
I told you, I don't know.
Squash, please.
You said you had a little boy, didn't you, Miss Thomas?
Do we have to talk about it now? I thought we were going to have lunch.
How old's your little boy?
He's 7 years old.
Where is he now?
He's in school up in San Francisco. Isn't his line going awful slow?
It's lunchtime. You know that cop that Garvey killed last night?
Mashed potatoes, country gravy.
Hear what I said?
Yes, I know he killed a cop.
He had a little boy, too.
There's nothing I can do.
No potatoes, thanks.
Yeah, there's something you can do, Miss Thomas. You can tell us where Garvey is.
If I knew, I'd tell you.
French fries, please.
You're kidding us, Miss Thomas, but we're not going to kid you. You know a lot more about this than you're telling us.
Maybe I do, but I'm scared.
Who are you afraid of?
Look, why can't you count me out of this? I don't want any part of it.
You're in all the way. The only way you're going to get out is to tell us what you know.
He'll kill me. Suppose something happens to me, nobody's going to worry about my kid.
You don't have to worry. He's not going to find out.
No dessert, please.
They'll both kill me.
Both? Who's the other one?
Oh, what's the use? Trouble no matter what you try to do. Nothing but trouble.
Garvey's working with somebody, is that it?
His name's Jack Fleming.
Yeah?
They made me promise to cover for them. Give them a place to hide out whenever the heat comes on.
Then you know where they are.
No, I don't. That's the truth.
Why do they need a place to hide out?
You said Garvey killed a cop.
What about Fleming?
Hey, Joe, you better move along.
Oh, I'm sorry. What about Fleming?
We're going to pull some jobs.
All right, we can skip the dessert. Come on. I'll take a check for all of them.
Let's go.
What kind of jobs? Where?
Hold up. Tomorrow night. Three Kings Liquor Store out in Wilshire.
Let's sit down.
They're both the same, Garvey and Fleming. They can't hold a gun without using
it. Yes, it's a damn. You dropped your tray. I'll get you some more.
Don't bother. I'm not hungry anymore.
You are listening to Dragnet, the case history of a police investigation.
Saturday, April 29th. Last rites were held for Sergeant John Maxwell, and he was buried at Holy Cross Cemetery. A guard of honor from the police department was present, along with most of the men Maxwell had worked with in Bunko Fugitive Detail. The chief of detectives delivered a short eulogy, and then one of the men from the department band sounded taps over the grave. We got back to the office at noon, checked in at the Record Bureau. The photocopy room had taken negatives of Garvey's and Fleming's coming out mugs and made duplicates that were distributed to all officers. The stakeouts continued at the Fair Deal and the 14th Street Hotel where Lorraine Thomas was staying. She was put under protective custody. Ben and I, Ricketts and Chandler, went on stakeout at the Three Kings Liquor Store on Wilshire Boulevard. It was a large, modern place that did a volume business, especially on Saturday night. Ricketts and Chandler covered the store from the outside. Ben and I were stationed in the supply room at the rear of the place where we had the main counter and most of the store in full view. We set up a prearranged signal with a clerk on duty, and if and when Garvey and Fleming showed up, the clerk was to accidentally knock an empty bottle off the counter. We waited until midnight. Nothing happened.
It's the first customer in half an hour. It's kind of slow.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Here comes another one.
No sale. It's a woman.
That clerk sure got the jitters.
Well, I'll put in with him.
I could go for a hamburger.
Why didn't you eat dinner?
I wasn't very hungry then.
Well, I've got an almond bar. You want?
Yeah, thanks. Wait a minute. Another customer.
Yeah, man. Can't see his face too well with that hat on, can you?
That's Fleming. Come on. Police officers, get your hands up.
Watch it, Joe. You're hitting.
He's going out the front. Come on.
Ricketts and Chandler stopped him.
Yeah, he's down. Watch him. Get the gun.
Yeah. Yeah, here it is.
That's Fleming, all right. Ricketts, call an ambulance.
What's the score?
Looks like one in the shoulder and legs, too.
What about Garvey?
I don't know.
What do you think?
Fleming stopped all the slugs.
Yeah.
Let's ask him. The wounded suspect was treated at Georgia Street Receiving Hospital and then booked into the prison ward at the General Hospital. At 11 a.m. the next day, we questioned him, but he refused to admit that he even knew Alfred Garvey. We re-questioned Fleming for the next 3 days with no results. Stakeouts continued. The search went on. There was no response to our APB. Garvey was still at large. As far as we were concerned, there was only one way to get directly to Garvey, and that was through Fleming. We called on Lorraine Thomas again and asked her that if she'd try to get some information on Fleming, try to get him to talk and to tell her where Garvey was.
I'm not even sure if he knows where Garvey's hiding.
He must have a good idea.
Even if he has, he's not going to tell me. He wouldn't trust me that far.
He'll go further with you and he will with us. He won't even give us his name.
I'm afraid it's up to you, Miss Thomas.
Why can't you let me out of this?
Hey, look, figure it this way. You knew about Fleming and Garvey. You knew they were in town. You knew what they were up to. You didn't break your back to save that dead cop's life.
Garvey shot him. I didn't.
You knew he was a killer. You knew he had a gun.
What do you want me to do?
Get close to Fleming. Visit him every day till he's off.
He doesn't trust me, I told you.
Then get him to trust you, will you? Do favors for him. He wants to contact friends to raise money for a lawyer. Help him do that. Run errands. Do anything for him within reason.
Suppose he finds out about the holdup that I told you about it.
He's got a long stretch ahead of him. He won't bother you.
They'll kill me if they find out. They wouldn't wait a minute.
They won't find out.
All right. Won't be my fault. Al did the shooting. He killed the cop. Let him square it up.
He'll square it with the court. There's only one trouble.
Yeah?
Maxwell's wife and kids. How does Al square it with them? On the morning of May 8th, suspect Jack Fleming was removed from his private room and wheeled down to the X-ray lab on the pretext of treatment. While he was absent, a dictaphone was placed in his room by a sound crew from the crime lab. Fleming was then returned. That afternoon, while Ben and I listened in on earphones in the next room, Lorraine Thomas paid her first visit to Fleming. We had briefed her on how to proceed in getting a suspect to talk, in particular, to reveal Garvey's hideout. It was a slow process. For the next 15 days, between the hours of 2 and 4 in the afternoon, Mrs. Thomas visited Fleming while Ben and I monitored their conversation in the adjoining room. For 15 days, despite all her shows of confidence, Fleming refused to confide. He was sullen and close-mouthed. Some afternoons, he would hardly speak to her. On the 16th day, his mood seemed to be improving.
Let me fix that telephone, Jack.
Is
that better?
Yeah. That's good. Thanks.
I got in touch with Dave and Johnny like you asked me to.
Huh? What'd they say?
Well, they said they could get you the money for the lawyer the day after tomorrow. And Dave said he might be able to see you tonight.
Yeah. That's fine. Once I get a lawyer, I'll stop worrying.
I stopped by Danelli's place, too. Pop Royce wasn't there. I'm going back tomorrow to see him. He ought to be able to help.
You've been okay, Larry. I won't forget it.
Well, that's what friends are for. Jim, sure sorry you had to get it this way.
Forget it. I can give it back where it came from.
Say, I bought you some new magazines, a couple of candy bars.
Well, put
them over here near the bed. Yeah, sure. Let me get them for you. There, Jack. See, I'll put them right here on this table. I'll bring you some more tomorrow.
No, that's fine. You're going to try and see Pop Royce again tomorrow.
Yeah, they told me he'd be in around noon for sure. If I don't see him then, I'll keep trying until I do.
Yeah, that's it. Oh, listen. Something else.
Sure, Jack.
Come here. I don't want to talk loud. The cops might have bugged this room.
Yeah.
All right. A little closer.
Okay.
Tonight, I want you to go to George's joint, the Blue Moon, down on South Flower.
Yeah?
And ask for George at the bar. He's usually around from 11 on.
Uh-huh.
Tell George you've seen me. He'll know it. Then tell him to take you to Al.
Take me to Al?
Yeah, Al Garvey. George knows the place.
Yeah. Okay, Jack.
And keep your mouth shut. Don't talk to anybody but George. He knows the place.
All right, Jack. He'll help you out.
Well?
Yeah.
A long wait.
Get paid. Let's go. 10:45 p.m. A detail of three cars followed Lorraine Thomas to the Blue Moon Tavern on South Flower Street. We parked down the block and watched her go in. At 15 minutes past 11, she came out with a small fat man in a dark blue suit. They got in a tan-colored coupe and drove south. The cruiser cars, using three-way radio, tailed the coupe alternately out through the Echo Park area and then back to the starting point at the Blue Moon Tavern. Lorraine Thomas went back into the bar with a man and 20 minutes later came out, caught a taxi, and took it to her hotel on 14th Street. We drove back to the office. It was 5 minutes past 1 a.m.
That's it.
I get it. Munko fugitive, Friday.
Lorraine Thomas, Sergeant. He showed me the place George did.
Where?
We drove past it. 1032 Alamo, apartment 3.
Is Garvey there now?
No. George said he's supposed to be there tomorrow in the afternoon, 5 o'clock. George said I'll have to go alone.
Are they watching the place?
I think so. Garvey's staying with another man. They got guns.
You know where Garvey is now?
George wouldn't tell me.
We can't afford to tip our hand. How do we know Garvey will be there at 5 o'clock tomorrow?
That's just it. We don't.
May 9th, 3 p.m. An immediate stakeout was placed at the suspected hideout. A detail of 20 plainclothesmen began filtering into the neighborhood in the vicinity of 1032 Alamo Street. The three-story apartment house at that address was checked thoroughly and then covered on all sides. Apartment 3 on the first floor was checked out, too. It was registered to a Thomas King, whom the manager identified as Alfred Garvey from his mugshot. To avoid pedestrian casualties, we toured the immediate vicinity between 3 and 4:30 that afternoon, advising residents and storekeepers to clear the street and stay inside. At 4:35 p.m., the men in the detail took up their assigned positions. We waited.
Hold that light, will you?
Yeah.
Hey. Awful lot of trouble for that punk Garvey.
Be more trouble if he doesn't show.
No sights left.
Hmm?
Canned coupe coming down the street behind us.
Same one we tailed last night.
A girl driving. There's two guys with him.
Well, Garvey's one of them. They're pulling up.
Ready?
Now, wait a minute. All right, let's go.
Police officers, hold it right there.
Al, cops!
No, get out. I'm behind the car.
Throw him in, Garvey. You haven't got a chance.
Al, break for the house!
All right, hold it, Ben.
That's it. Both of them.
Come on.
Both dead. Garvey. The other guy. Rotten case.
Rotten business.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
On August 2nd, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 93, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Jack Fleming, the only survivor of the holdup gang, was found guilty of several counts of armed robbery. Garvey's accomplices who aided him in hiding out were tried and convicted of being accessories. They are serving prison terms as prescribed by law. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.A. Wharton, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, the best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet from Los Angeles. The Halls of Ivy is pleasant listening tomorrow on NBC.
All right, welcome back here on the Old Time Dragnet Show. Again, that's an amazing turn of events. You never know what happens when you're dealing with a criminal and a criminal case. You wouldn't think you would see a whole lot of this type of thing on the Bunko detail. But one thing that this show serves to illustrate is that the unexpected often happens. So even in the simplest of case, you're not going to think that this is the big be all and end all thing that you're going to end up with a dead police officer and two dead criminals, the simple fraud case. But when somebody's armed and dangerous, all bets are off. So very interesting the way this turned, and I think it definitely surprised. Surprise listeners with the way that it turned, but that's part of the based on a true story, because as you're dealing with a true story, truth is a lot stranger than what most people would come up with. So, of course saw a couple things here that you would not see today. First of all, you had the wire. You had the wire on the room where they were keeping the where they were keeping Garvey, which now of course is just no, that's simply not permitted. But, you know, back then, yeah, that was one of the tactics that I used. So, it's interesting to be able to see those old tactics so you at least understand what exactly went on. So, overall, a very interesting episode to take note of. I also love, you know, absolutely love the way this one, I think they did a great job on. This one was not one that they tried to go out and do on location. You know, that, of course, was one, you know, they tried that, I think, several episodes back. And we got really kind of sketchy sound on it. But even though this one was done in studio, you know, it really sounded like there was a parade going on. They made it sound absolutely real. So in your mind, you saw everything there. Superb, superb audio on this. This is one of the best yet in the series that I've heard in terms of the audio and making it sound real. And then, of course, there was the scene where they're ordering the meal, and they're going over, the case and trying to get her to cooperate, and you know it's like, oh, can you go ahead? No potatoes, please. Skip dessert. And they actually did this on the TV show, on the 1950s show. They actually had, they actually went out to dinner with somebody. They insisted on going to, like, this health food restaurant. And, you know, they basically made confessions to, like, 7 murders over like okra and that type of thing. So it's kind of surrealistic when they do that, you know, when they're out at a restaurant and questioning either a suspect or a potential witness. But it's one of those things that makes it unique, because of course these type of things happen. We usually don't say it that way because, you know, it's more, because, you know, with our imaginations of the big TV producers, you know, it's more interesting, you know, if it's, you know, the drama of the interrogation room. But he doesn't always go that way. And I think that's one of the really interesting things here that happens. All right. So we're going to go ahead and we will be bringing this episode to a close. I do want to invite you back next week where we'll continue on. That reminds me, I actually neglected to read one of the comments earlier, and this is another one off of Podcast Alley. This edition, with exceptional character actors, and this was in regard to the Big Thank You, is enhanced by Adam Graham's comments and insights. He makes an interesting show more interesting by pointing out the wonderful mood music and unique sound effects. Thanks a lot, and that was from L.R. Samford. Really, I think it is phenomenal work that they do in bringing this to life. I think this is one of the more realistic radio shows that basically, you know, it does, you know, it sounds real. It's very much reality focused. They make a great effort here, and I think it does get better as the show just continues to go on. And, you know, it's a challenge to do this well on the theater of the mind. Because usually, I think even some of our modern radio shows, I've listened to some, and we do have them, they're kind of small in number. The sound effects don't necessarily sound as realistic as what they were able to do here. You know, this, I think, just blew me away in terms of how this really sounded. You know, considering you're shooting this whole or recording this whole thing in a radio studio, you're able to make a parade. It's just, it is remarkable. So, thanks for the comments. And please, cast your vote. And if you want, leave a comment over at podcastalley.com. Again, email me your thoughts, adam@adamsweb.us, or visit our blog, www.orbital.com/dragnet-radio-show, or visit online community, dragnetradio.ning.com. All right, well, this show has been on the Blueberry Network. That's blueberry with no ease.com. For now, this is Adam Graham, signing off.